Morning to everyone. Today's daf is daf Yudalid in Erechim. We're on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. We're at the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud. God willing, today we'll finish the first parak of Erechim. I meant, of course, the second parak of Erechim. And we're going to begin, hopefully today, the third parak of Erechim. Let's get underway. Second parak of Erechim is really a tour. It's not much in terms of Erechim. First Mishnah of the parak had to do with Erechim, but after that it was really just a tour. Because the first Mishnah of the second parak talked about the range. What is the most a person is going to pay by an erech, and what's the minimum a person is going to pay? Most is 50 shkalim. Minimum is 1 shekel. And then after that, as long as we're talking about ranges and minimums and maximums, so the Mishnah says one excellent opportunity to talk about other areas in shas where we have ranges of minimums and maximums. We talked about the woman who was a toa. She didn't know where she was in terms of her nida ziva cycle. And a number of days that she needs to see clean in terms of her resetting her biological clock, she'll know that she'll become a nid again. We talked about the range of negayim, how many weeks a person can be sequestered when he's a mitzora, 1 to 3. We talked about the range of how many full months do we put in the course of a year? A year made up of 12 months. Remember that Mishnah? We talked about... minimum number of tekiya shofars that were blown daily in the Beis HaMikdash versus a maximum, 21 to 48. We literally were all over the place, right? So we talked about halal, that was also part of the second parak, right? And then the Gemara used it as an opportunity to talk about the dating, right? The years in which the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. We spent the last half and a half discussing that. And we're almost done. We're almost done with the second parak. What's the next topic up for discussion? Number of sheep that we keep ready to shecht for the carbon tamid. Okay, number of sheep. Ein polchachin. I know it sounds strange. Sounds like, where are we right now? But again, that's the whole point of the second parak. The second parak is not really on any particular topic. It's like it just is into this range. Ein polchachin mishisha talayim hamavukarim belishka satalayim kedei. Kedei l'Shabbos u'l'yamim tovim shel Rosh Hashanim u'mosifim ad olam. How many animals do we keep ready in the pen? Right here, I'd like to use the joke bullpen, although it's not, they're sheep, so no. But how many do we keep ready in the pen? So the minimum number is 6, and the maximum, says the Mishnah, there is no maximum. Okay, and why that many? So the Mishnah says, well, it has to do with Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah. Now, 2 days of Yontif, of course, the Mishnah is not going to talk about that because 2 days of Yontif is a diaspora concept. We know about 2 days of Yontif, and sometimes we even know about 3 days of Yontif. But that's a Chusar's thing that we experience. Obviously, in Eretz Yisrael, they're not going to have 2 days of Sukkot and 2 days of, but they could have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Meaning, because 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is not an issue of Sfeika Diyuma, 2 days of Rosh Hashanah is a different issue altogether for another time to be discussed. But in the meantime, however, even in Eretz Yisrael, even when there was a base of Mikdash, you could have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. So you could be hunkered down, so to say, with a double Rosh Hashanah, followed then by a Shabbos. So now, and there are two carbonos brought every day, because we're talking now about the carbon tamid, the tamid shel shachar and the tamid shel bein harabayim. So that's 2 karbanos every day, but 3 consecutive days, that's called multiplied. So that's 3 consecutive days, so that's 6. That gets us to the number 6. Now, if you think about this for just one more moment, you realize, the Mishnah seems to be very incomplete, because the Mishnah is just talking about the karban tamid. What about all the karban musafs that need to be brought as well? Where if you do the math, you will see that there are a lot of karbanos that are brought, and it's not just sheep as well. So the Mishnah is a little bit strange. Meaning, you need 6 because once in a while you're gonna walk into a 2-day Rosh Hashanah followed then by Shabbos, you're gonna need much more than 6. So the Gemara is gonna raise this issue as it seems that the Mishnah is incomplete. Umosifa nad olam ein pochasim ishtei chatzotzos mitisha kinaros umosifim ad olam. Minimum of 2 chatzotzos when they blow on the trumpets. Minimum of 9 kinaros. I'll call it a harp, because I don't know. Umosifan ad olam. And the numbers can go up as much as you want. As many trumpets as you want, and as many harps as you want. And the Gemara is going to talk about that as well. And finally, Hatzilzel Lavad. Now, what about your symbols? Right? The word Tzilzel is very similar to the English word symbols. What about the symbols? So only one. Tzilzel Achad. Now, I usually, in my mind, have symbols two crashing against one another. So maybe it means one set. Maybe the symbol was only one.
And they hit it with a stick.
Maybe they hit it with a stick. Whatever the case is. In other words, but for that, it's only going to be one. Okay, but let's take this Mishnah apart piece by piece. We start with the beginning of the Mishnah, and the Gemara starts right away with the question that Hedy raises. What's going on? The Mishnah is talking about six. You need much more than six to meet him. You need a lot more than just the six mentioned in the Mishnah if, in fact, we're preparing for 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, 1 day of Shabbos. So Tanam ba'amakai, so the atamidim l'chudekai. So the Gemara says you misunderstood the Mishnah. We all did. We misunderstood the Mishnah. The Mishnah was not telling us that the reason that we need to have six animals that are prepared is because of Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos. That's not it. In fact, the Mishnah is just talking about the Karban Tamid. And the Mishnah is just talking in generalities, meaning the Mishnah is not even talking about Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah. In general, you need six lambs that are prepared. And then when you read this Mishnah and you repeat the Mishnah, you keep going over this Mishnah again and again, the Shabbos Rosh Hashanah is just a memory aid, meaning that's just to help you remember. What was the number? Oh, yes, yeah, Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, 3 days. 3 times 2 is 6. It's just simana ba'alma, it's just a memory aid, so that I now remember it's going to be 6. V'hachi kamar. Ein pochas mishisha tlaim ha'mevukarim, b'lishkas ha'tlaim, arba yamim kodem shchita. And the reason why, in other words, so good. So now we know it has nothing to do with Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah. So what does it have to do with? Why do we need six in the bullpen? So the Gemara's answer is, because of lishkas ha'tlaim, arba yamim kodem shchita, because you need an animal examined for 4 days. 4 days? Where is the magic in 4 days? So the Gemara goes on to explain. Umani ben Bagbaghi, the Tanya. Gemara quotes a Braisa, right? Ben Bagbag Omer, two very noteworthy Tanayim, Ben Bagbag and Ben Barhehe. And it's interesting because both of them chose names. I cannot imagine that that's their real name. There must be some sort of nickname, right? Or however you want to describe it. Both of them chose names that have to do with the letter Hey. Right? Bag Bag is Beis Gimel, Beis Gimel. Right? Beis Gimel, Gematria is 2 and 3, so that means 5. And Hey Hey, obviously, is the name Hey. Yeah. Right. So they gave themselves names. And they went with they liked the letter Hey. Right? It has to do with Shem Hashem. Okay, so Ben Bagbag he detani Ben Bagbag Omer Meinan l'tamid shetan biko rabbi yamim karnim shchita. How do I know that every carbon requires a 4 day examination? Tam alomar. So the Gemara is going to use a gzereshava. It says by the carbon tamid parshas Pinchas tishmur lakrivle b'moado. Okay, that we're all familiar with. Ulahalon Omer, and later on it says, now not later on, meaning earlier. Okay, in Chumash parshas Bo. This week's Parsha, very good. This week's Parsha, Parsha's Bow. And in this week's Parsha, it says that we took the Karban Pesach into our homes on the 10th day of the month, and only to get ready to shecht it now on the 14th day of the month. Okay. How much of Rashi do we want to go through? Let's hit up this Rashi. Because it really is important just in terms of understanding what's going on right now. The Gemara now presented to us a Gezer Shava. The Gezer Shava tells us that Karban Pesach, which I understand is not the Karban Tamid, okay? Karban Pesach, and by the way, the Karban Pesach was offered in Mitzrayim, no Mishkan, no Mizbeach, meaning it's a, you know, it was a historical event. Obviously, it then becomes a mitzvah olamis once the Torah is given. So it's a strange starting point to teach us the laws of carbon, but still, carbon Pesach, we know the dates. We know that we were told, Besor l'chodesh, on the 10th day of the month, you bring the carbon Pesach in, and we also know that you shecht on the 14th. So we have a range for the carbon Pesach from the 10th to the 14th, which, by the way, is how many days? Not to try to confuse you, but how many days is that?
Five.
It's 5 days, right? In other words, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Okay, I know when we count, sometimes you get a little confused, but 10 is, in other words, we'll count the day 10. So that's 5 days. Hold that thought in your mind for just a moment. As you'll see, that becomes somewhat of an issue. Okay, and so we have the pasuk telling us by the Karm Pesach that it is for 4 days. The Torah says, "Va'yalachem l'mishmeres shimur." You guard it, you safeguard it, you watch it, you examine it, you inspect it. And so, by the pasuk, by the Karm Talmid, it says, "Tishmeru lakriv li b'moado." Same story. It says the word shimur, which means that just like you needed that kind of examination by Karm Pesach, so too you needed that kind of examination by the by Karban Tumid. Now let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi starts on the bottom of the previous Amud. And Rashi writes, "Arba yamim kodem shchito misham hachi beinim shisha." And this gets us to the number 6, says Rashi. How? How do 4 days of examination get us to the number 6? So Rashi says, "La'olam debishas chinuch nasnu sham shisha mivukarim dalad yamim kodem lachin but not liyom rishon shnayin letmidim." Now, because what's going to happen is like this. Meaning, Rashi says, just imagine the normal cycle of a Karban Tamid. So, first of all, your starting point is, of course, 2 animals every day. So, daily, you're going to need to take out from the pen 2 animals. So, Rashi says, Shnayin l'tmidim v'nasnu shayim tachteim v'yavakrum v'yom sheni. So, what you're going to do, says Rashi, is like this. Meaning, you're going to take 2 out, you're going to replace them with 2. Now, the 2 that you replace them, how many days do they need to sit there for? So the answer is going to be 4 days, right? Because we're assuming now that the Karban Pesach sets the tone. Every animal requires 4 days. We're going to assume that you can offer it on the 4th day. So, b'yom sheni nat lushnayim in arba, hanosarim v'nasdu shayim tachtayim. So on day 2, now you take 2 out and you replace it with another 2. B'yom shlishi nat lushnayim hanosarim in arishonim, and then on the 3rd day, you're going to take 2 out and you're going to replace them with 2. So once the cycle begins, so you see that by day 3 already, you're going to have 6 animals sitting in the pen. Now, what happens on day 4? Day 4 now, you've had an animal now sitting there for 3 days. On day 4, those 2 are going to be taken out to be replaced by 2. So in other words, on any given day now in the Beis HaMikdash, you're going to basically have 6 in the pen. Right? The days that you put in day 1, the 2 of that you put in day 1 come out on day 4. The 2 that you put in day 2 come out on day 5. Right? You see the cycle? And so the cycle is going to be basically a 3-day rotation. So 3 times 2 is going to be 6. V'nimsu kol atmidim anishchatim evukarim dalad yamim kor nishchita sham yom habikor v'yom hashchita kach shamati. Rashi says, this is a pshat that I heard, and that results now in 6 animals every single day that are sitting in the pen. Okay? The kashuli. And just a little bit more of Rashi. And Rashi says, it's a nice pshat. He says, but here's the difficulty with this pshat. Halo dam l'arba yamim de Pesach. De bikura ba'asar uvishchita b'yadalit. Meaning, now this doesn't mimic what happened by Karm Pesach. Karm Pesach, when did they get it? On the 10th. When did they offer it? On the 14th. Rashi was assuming a 4-day schedule, meaning that you actually take it out on day 4. But Rashi says, but that's not true by the Karm Pesach. Hare arba yamin levad miyom hashchita. So Rashi says, what seems to me now is that you have a discrepancy. Because it's 4 days and then Yom HaShechita. Now, if it's 4 days and then Yom HaShechita, now if you did that and you looked at the cycle, so how many animals now would you have on a constant basis? 8. Right. Not 6, but 8. So Rashi says that's difficult. It's a nice pshat, but it's difficult only simply because we seem to be day off from the Karban Pesach. So Rashi says, so maybe what you can argue is like this. There were 8 on the day of inauguration. Maybe there was 8, but then when 2 were taken out, so then you had a minimum of 6. Meaning, it's true, you're going to replace those 2 that you of the 8 that you took out, but in other words, you will never see less than 6 in the bullpen. Even though it's true there will be eight, but once they're taken out, we don't count those two, and maybe Rashi says maybe that's how we can resolve the one-day discrepancy. Okay. Rashi, by the way, Rashi offers another pshat as well, but in the meantime, however, we'll right now stay with Rashi's first pshat in terms of what the significance of six animals are. How do we learn it from the Karban Pesach? Let's go back to the Gemara. Let's continue in the Gemara.
I have a question on the cycle.
Yeah.
There's no limit. Presumably the six are going to be marked.
Yeah. And then, what do we do with the other animals that are there? It's a good question. Unless you want to tell me that they may be able to be used for other Karbanos, perhaps. Okay. It's a good question. So, right? Suggestion. Okay. Sorry, let's go on in the Gemara. Our pshat in the Mishnah is correct, says the Gemara, meaning that even though the Mishnah talks about Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah, that's not really the issue. How do I know that? Kedei l'Shabbos. Because when you go back to the Mishnah, read the Mishnah again and read it carefully. The Mishnah says kedei. The Mishnah doesn't say l'Shabbos. It says kedei l'Shabbos. V'lo ketani l'Shabbos shmami. Now that's clear. Meaning that the Mishnah only gives Shabbos and Rosh Hashanah as a marker, as a siman, to help us remember, oh yeah, the number is going to be six. Okay. Next, Mishtei Chatzos Umosif and Abad Kama. Now, the Gemara, even though the Mishnah says, when you want the Chatzos, as much as you want, the Gemara is going to say, really? That much? Meaning, an infinitum? So, Amrav Huna, Vamrila, Amrav Zavdi, Amrav Huna, Ad Me'ah Ve'esrim. Maximum number of trumpets is 120. Beautiful orchestra. In the Beis HaMikdash, 120 trumpets. Shenemar v'imahem kohanim l'me'ah ve'asrim mechatzrim v'chatzor tzros. Gemara quotes a pasuk from Divrei Hayamim. Okay, 120 is going to be your maximum. Mitisha kinoros v'tzil tzal levan minah ha'nimila amrav asi amakrava asaf b'mitzal sayim. Asaf, one of the orchestra members, so he has mitzal saim, he had his symbols. Now the Gemara says, mitzal saim treyavu. Well, that's plural. Our Mishnah says only one. Kevan dechad avidate avde vechad gavra avid behu karilu chad. Right, one made the sound, one man produced the sound, but it's karilu chad, but you read it as one. So in other words, it's one symbol and not more than one symbol. Okay. Ein pochas mishnayim esar levim omdim al haduchan. The choir. Remember, we talked. We're back to our sound system. Remember, we talked about the choir. The choir that sings in conjunction with the karbanos. More specifically, sings while the nesachim are being poured on the mizbeach. Right. We had this discussion not that long ago. But how many members to the choir should there be? So the Mishnah says, and the choir is made up of levim. Right. So omdim al. So 12 minimum. 12 minimum member of the choir that's going to be singing. Umosifan ad olam, and you can just keep adding. Ein hakatan nichnas la'azara la'avoda ela b'shash alavim omrim b'shir. Now, how about the children's choir? So the Mishnah says, yep, but the children can only be there while the men are there on the duchen. Meaning children cannot go in unattended, but while the adults are singing, so then you can bring in the kids' choir as well. Okay, velo hayu omrim benevo v'chinor ela bepeh. Don't give the kids instruments, meaning that would be a waste. But rather have the kids sing vocals. Kedeliten tevel b'ne'ima. It gives a sweetness to the whole sound, meaning we like kids' voices. Look how many boys' choirs are out there. Okay, keep the kids out of the instruments. Let the adults use the instruments, but the kids should be singing with their voices. Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov Amar in Olin Laminyan vein Olin Leduchan Ela Ba'aretz Hayu Omdim. Okay, as far as the kids are concerned, so they don't count towards the minyan. Meaning, we have a number. The Mishnah says the number is 12. So kids don't count. Meaning, we want the kids there. The kids, we want them to sing, but they're not going to count to the minyan. They don't go up on the platform. Right? There was apparently some sort of platform. I'm not really sure where it is. I guess when we get to Midos, we'll try to get a better understanding of where exactly they stood. But there was a platform over there. But only the adults went on the platform. The kids did not go on the platform. They were on the ground. They were between the legs of the Levium, meaning they were just standing by the legs of the Levium. They did not stand on the platform of the Levium, and they were given a nickname. And the nickname was Sare HaLevium. They pestered the Levium. That seems to be their nickname. They were like little,
ankle biters.
Right. It does not seem to be a nice nickname. It's interesting. We'll talk more about that nickname a little bit later on in the Gemara. The choir is made up of 12, minimum of 12 men, Hani Keneged me. Now why 12? What was significant about the number 12? Amar Rav Papa Keneged Tisha Kinaros, Ushnei Nevalim, V'tzil Tzol Achash, and Amar Hushnei Masar. So the Gemara says, because you want a minimum number of vocals corresponding to the minimum number of instruments. Meaning, how many instruments did we have in total? So we had 9 Kinaros, 2 Nevalim, 1 Tzil Tzol, so we had 12. So we don't want the number of vocals to be less than that. So therefore, it's 12 corresponding to the 12 instruments. Okay, so in order to create some sort of balance. Again, if you know and understand music, all this will speak to you. I'm not. I don't really put myself in that category. But this is really all about running a conducting an orchestra. Ein hakata nichnas lazar lavod ala b'shash alavim anani milam rav Yochanan makra. V'yamod Yeshua banav ve'echav kadmiel banav b'nei Yehuda ke'echad lanetzach al osei hamalacha beveis Elokim. The idea that we can allow the children to go in is referred to in this pasuk in Ezra. Lo hayu omrim lo b'nevo v'lo b'chinur ela b'peh lememer denevo lachud v'kinur lachud. Now, from the language of the Mishnah, it sounds like navel and kinur are two separate instruments. Now, it would be very helpful in this discussion if I knew what a navel was and I knew what a kinur was. Meaning, there's some sort of harp or something along those lines. Not really sure, but the point is that whatever it is, they're clearly not the same. So, lema masisin delok Rav Yehuda. Now, it seems that our mission is not going like Rav Yehuda. Detanya, we learned in the Bryce, Rav Yehuda Omer, kinur shel mikdash shel shiva nimim. Look, you're going to see, based on this discussion we're about to have right now, that Rav Yehuda says kinur and navel are really one and the same thing. And so all the Gemara's point is going to be is that our Mishnah is not going like Rav Yehuda, which it's not a tragedy, but it's bookkeeping, if you will. So kinur of the Beis HaMikdash was made up of 7 strings. Okay, so you want to call it a harp, you want to call it a guitar. It's a stringed instrument, and it was 7 strings. Shenamar, the pasuk says, "Sovei asmachos es panecha." Okay, the pasuk in Tehillim, "Sovei asmachos," I was satiated with the delight. I'll take "Sovei el sheva." Play on the word "Sovei." We're going to read it as sheva, same root, right? We could do that in Darshanot. So your harp of the Beis Hamikdash is made up of 7. Shal Yemos Mashiach, 8. Okay, just talked about this at the Bris. Right, the Yemos HaMashiach, when we're going to have a harp for the Yemos HaMashiach, so that is now above the number 7. That's the number 8. 8 is a Lamala Menateva. Right, we talked about this. So that's the harp is going to, of the Yemos HaMashiach is going to be made up of 8 strings. Shenemar Lamatech al Shminis al Nima Shminis. Okay, one additional string for the base for the Yemos HaMashiach, and Shel Olam Haba. Okay, it seems very clear from this discussion that Yemos HaMashiach and Olam Haba are two distinct time periods. That's for another time, another discussion. Eser. So for that, it's going to be used 10. So why do we jump over the number 9? Look up the Marasha. I'm sure he discusses. Shenemar Alei Asur v'Alei Navel Alei Higayon Bichinor. The Omer, and the pasuk goes on to say, "Hodul Hashem b'chinor b'nevel asur zarmelo shir lo shir chadash." Okay, we should be familiar with these pesukim. This from the 92nd perek of Tehillim, "Alei asur v'alei navel." Do you know where that is? That's in the Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbos. Liyom HaShabbos is a prelude, so to say, for Olam Haba. Right? It's Me'ein Olam Haba. So the Torah there describes that alei asur, it's a 10-strung instrument. Okay, the point, and by the way, just an interesting Rashi, a very interesting Rashi. How do I know that this is talking about Olam Haba? So I gave you one idea. Perhaps it has to do with the fact that it's Shabbos, and Shabbos is main Olam Haba. Look at Rashi, Benevel Asur. It's the first Rashi of the Gemara. Shall Eser Ni'im Ula Olam Haba Mishtai. So Rashi says, I know that this perek in Tehillim is talking about Olam Haba. How do I know that? Midichsiv Shir Chadash. You ever notice this? That when we talk about songs in the Torah, it could either be Shir or Shira. Right? It's one of those words that can go male or female. We speakers of the English language, we're not sensitive to the genders of words. But for those of you who speak any other language other than English, so you'll know that everything has a gender, right? Male and female. And it's I don't know language, I know a couple languages, it's Farsi? No?
It's Indo-European, it's the same root.
Okay. So you're with us. Okay, so but Hebrew and Spanish and all your Latin languages, so everything gets gendered, male, female. So, but in Hebrew, there are a couple of words. I don't know if this is true by Spanish. In Hebrew, there are a couple of words that can go either way. That can go male or female. Shir is one of them. Sometimes you say shir and sometimes you say shira. Now, Rashi says, it's interesting, Rashi. Midichsiv shir chadash. In the perek, we're learning about this 10-string instrument. It says shir chadash. Lashon zachar. The shiros ha'olam hazeh lashon akeva. When we're talking about a shir of this world, olam hazeh, so we're going to use the feminine. We're going to use the word shira. And when we talk about olam haba, we're going to use the masculine, we're going to use shir. Now, Rashi continues to write, k'da'amar b'mechilta, k'shem sh'nekeva zu, yoledes kach shuos halalu, sofon laleid tsaros. It's very interesting. Right? Just like a woman, right? What's the nature of a woman? She gives birth. In this world, every time we have a tshuva, we have some sort of salvation, but sofon lele tsaros. But it's not an ultimate salvation. It's going to give birth to more problems, right? You heard this very often. Solutions usually, and any solution to a problem will usually give birth to another problem, okay? And Rashi says, that's olam hazeh, that's this world. So even though we sing shira, and every time we sing shira, that means that we just experienced salvation, but it's going to be a salvation that is going to produce another set of problems. So there's no permanence to any Yeshua that we experience in this world. Hence the Lashon Nekeva. Aval Shir Sha'olam Haba, Lashon Zachar, She'eno Yulad. But once we get to Olam Haba, there we're going to sing not Shira, but Shir. Because there, that's it. No birthing. Right? It will be the ultimate Shir, the Shir of Olam Haba. Interesting. Back to the Gemara. I'm sorry. So that's Rashi says that's how I know we're talking about Olam Haba. So Afilu Tamar Rav Yehuda. So again, the Gemara is in a very technical discussion right now from the Brisa that we just quoted. The different strung instruments. Olam Hazeh is 7. Yemos HaMashiach is 8. Olam Haba is 10. But it's clear though, the author of this brisa, which happens to be Rav Yehuda, is of the opinion that Navel and Kinur are one and the same. And our Mishnah does not maintain that Navel and Kinur are one and the same. La'olam Afilu tem Rav Yehuda la'olam haba, I did the nafish nimin di day, nafish kale, ki navel, karile navel. So the Gemara says, look, no. In the olam haba, strung instrument, it's given an extra string. So you know what? It starts to sound like a navel. Meaning really, kinor and navel are two different instruments. And really, fundamentally, it's a kinor. But once it's given an extra string, it produces the same sound as a navel. Again, I'd understand all this if I knew better what these instruments actually were, but the Gemara says, you can even understand our mission is going like Rav Yehuda. And that's well beyond me. The last part of the Gemara, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Ein Olam Min HaMinyan, Tana V'So'ade HaLevim Hayu Nikraim. Gemara quotes a Braisa. The Braisa gives them a better nickname. Remember the nickname that we used in our Mishnah for them? They were called Su'urei HaLevim. Nudgers. Nudges. So the Braisa has a better nickname for them, So'ade HaLevim. They helped. Right, you know, right. I'll speak on behalf of myself. Not the best voice, right? Average, probably even less than average. But if I'm singing together with people who know how to sing, so it really helps. On my own, I'm kind of floundering. So the Braisa, so Ade Alevim, they help the Levim. Meaning because they're young and their voices are so good, they really are helpful to the Levim. Okay, that's it's a nice nickname. It's a better nickname. Tana Didan, so the Gemara says, okay, let's now go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah does not have such a nice nickname for them. They're called Seur Levim. Kaven Dahani Katin Kalayhu, V'ani Av Kalayhu, Hani Mekatete, V'hani Lo Mekatete, Karelet Seiri. So the Gemara explains, not flatteringly, that their voices were young and soft and sweet, right? It was like a nice, precise voice that came out. And the older men, you know, they sing like older men. It's it's not as good, it's not as nice, it's not as sweet. And so therefore, you know, every time you have the adults on the platform and you have the kids down in the pit, you know, singing, so there's going to be mekatete. There's just, it's going to be a natural animosity that exists between the older voices and the younger voices, and the older Levim are not going to be so pleased with the younger voices. Jealousy, you know, they sound really good and we don't sound as good. That's the name given in our Mishnah of Tse'irei HaLevim. Okay. Hajon Alach Einei Rachin. And by the way, it's interesting because despite the fact that there is that natural animosity, but still, in other words, it's worth it. There's value to having the kids there singing, I'm sure from a chinuch standpoint, but just from a, you know, it's nicer. It's a nicer choir when the kids are there. Hajon Alach Einei Rachin, that is the end of the second paragraph. Okay, and we begin. We begin now the third parak of Erechin. Now, the third parak of Erechin is extremely short. It is today, tomorrow, Sunday. I know we're not going to finish on Sunday, but it's really short. But topics we're covering in the third parak, you're really going to enjoy it. We're going to talk about Kriyas Yamsuf, right, which is like perfect in terms of Parshas HaShavuah. Right, next week we're going to be reading Parshas B'Shalach. Could not have asked for better timing in terms of Kriyas Yamsuf. And then Lashon Hara, the Isser of Lashon Hara, and the Mitzvah of Tochacha, giving rebuke. These are the topics that are coming up in the very short third parak of Erechin. Okay, so very enjoyable, and we get to talk a little bit, not today, tomorrow we'll start, hopefully we'll start our discussion tomorrow about the... about Lashon Hara. It is the source of all the Gemaras of Lashon Hara are contained right here in the third parak of Erechin. Okay. But we start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is on the bottom of Yud Gimel. By Erechin, it could come out to be a kula, it could come out to be a chomer. Stay with me. We'll understand what that means in just a second. Now, when you sanctify, when you consecrate an ancestral field, ancestral just simply means you inherited it, right? It's like making money the old-fashioned way. So an ancestral field. So it could also be a kula or a chumra. Again, stay with me. We'll understand that better in just a second. Shur hamuad, shehemis ha'eved. You have a shur hamuad, an ox that gored already, and it kills an eved kanani. You have to pay the owner of that eved kanani 30 shkalim. Could be a kula, could be a chumra. Onus ha'mafata, motzi shemra, right? Either rape or seduction or defamation. So lahakel ulahachmer could be a kula, could be a chumra. Okay? Again, just stay with me. You'll understand all this a little bit later on. Yesh be'erchen lahakel ulahachmer. So, but first, our discussion starts off with erchen. Erchen could be a kula and a chumra. Ketzad, Mishnah says, what's an example of that? Echad sheherich es anasha b'Yisrael v'es ha'ko'or sheb'Yisrael nosin chamishim sela. By erech, it does not matter what the actual value is of that person. Could be somebody who's not, it's a beautiful human being, right? Beautiful over here is physical, meaning physically beautiful. And beautiful over here also means strong. And like, in other words, somebody who, if you sold them on the open market, he would fetch an unbelievably good price. And you could be talking about making the erech of someone who's ko'or. Ko'or means he's ugly, right? Just, and not strong, and does not have good physical attributes. And he wouldn't sell well on the open market. So the Mishnah says in both of these cases, and if you say, I'd like to give his erech, it's all going to be the same. Chamishim Sela. It's 50 Selaim. So in other words, if I asked to give His damim, if he was na'eh, could be much more than 50. So 50 would represent the kula. If he's ka'or, if he's disgusting, and I said damim, so I'd be giving much less. Erech would represent there a chumra. The imam ahare damaval, I know, sin is shavyav. So you see that because the rate of erech is a fixed rate, it could sometimes be a kula, it could sometimes be a chumra. Now, it sounds like the Mishnah is limiting the whole discussion to a Jew. Why? The Mishnah says, why did the Mishnah have to do that? Why did the Mishnah add the word Yisrael? Seems to be an additional word. So, Lema Masisim Delokar Amer, Ditnan Ravi Kochav Ramer Omer Nerach Avalo Marech. Rav Meir says that a guy has an erech, he has an erech value. So that if a Jew were to give, or to obligate himself to give the erech value of a non-Jew, he's on the hook. Our Mishnah sounds like he doesn't have an erech value, so the Gemara is pointing out our Mishnah does not seem to be seemingly go like Rav Meir. It's not Mishnah Rav Meir. Generically, we assume normally that Mishnayos that are not labeled, not named, are going like Rav Meir. So it is a little bit difficult that our Mishnah is not going like Rav Meir. So the Gemara says, no, afilu tamer Rav Meir, who adin dafilu avi kochav nami, ela milsa agav orche kamash malan. No, the Gemara says, look, you could say our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Meir. You could. Why does the Mishnah add the word Yisrael? Maybe just to tell us another halacha, not necessarily related. Kamash malan kid Rabbi Yehuda Marav, dam Rabbi Yehuda Marav, asa la adam shiomer kamana e kanani zeh. Interesting halacha. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, end of the first parak of Avodah Zarah, talks about this halacha that you're not allowed to freely compliment a kenani. Okay, the pasuk says lo sicha name, right? And from that pasuk, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah learns that there are three prohibitions from that pasuk of lo sicha name. Number one, you can't sell them land in Eretz Yisrael. Number two, you can't give them gifts if there's nothing in return for that. Right? Lo titein lahem. I'm sorry, matnas chinam, don't give them free gifts. And finally, lo titein lahem chein. You can't compliment them. Okay? For a different time, we'll discuss basis for this. But in the meantime, however, what our Mishnah is adding with the word Yisrael is maybe just reminding us of this halacha, alluding to this halacha. Also, la'adam, shiomar kamana, kananizah. V'lisne esana shebisol v'esakor shebekananim. If that's what the Mishnah wanted to do, why didn't the Mishnah just simply say, you can't, the beautiful amongst the Jews and the ka'or amongst the Kananim, right? That's okay. So, b'charuma kamari, betrayuma lo mari. So the Gemara says no, because the Mishnah is not going to do that. The Mishnah is not going to jump from one nation to another nation, meaning the Mishnah likes to keep everything nice and consistent. Remember, the Mishnah is there for it to be memorized, so the Mishnah wants a nice sing-song to it. It's not going to go from Yisrael to Kanani. So Velova Haktani Hagdol Shabikuna Vesakhtana Shabi Yisrael. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we'll see later on. The Mishnah jumps from Kahuna to Yisrael. Hasim Chadumahu. That's not a jump. Kohen Yisrael, that's all part of the same nation. Ela Maktishu Dikdisha Kohanim Tfei. It just happens to be that Kohanim have more Kedusha. Vibai Sema Hudaka Baila Mr. Seifa. Or maybe the reason why the Mishnah inserted the word Yisrael and did not want to jump over to Kanani is because the continuation of the Mishnah. The Mishnah goes on to say, "Steyachuza de biYisrael hu de mishkachala b'avikacham la mishkachala." Because we're going to talk about Steyachuza ancestral field. This idea of sanctifying ancestral field and redeeming ancestral field that's only by Yisrael. That's not by Kanani. Delav b'nei achuza ninu, because they're not b'nei achuza. Hachiktan la b'Yisrael. That's why the Mishnah adds the word Yisrael. Okay. Adkan. We continue now with the next Mishnah. Stei chuzal ha'akol la'achmir. Let me give just a brief introduction over here. Okay, a person can be makdish his ancestral field. Now, what does that mean, makdish his ancestral field? So what it means by that is that you simply point to one of the lands that you own, that you inherited from your father, and you say, I'd like to donate, to dedicate this to the Beis HaMikdash, and you actually sanctify it. You consecrate it. Okay? Every consecration is essentially a transaction. It basically now means I'm no longer the owner. I hereby declare this to be owned by the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash now is owner of this property. Okay. Now, you can redeem it at any point in time you want. All the psukim for all this discussion is found in Parshas Bahar. Okay? This is not really the main location for this discussion. We're just touching on this issue right now. Later on in the Masechta, the later prakim, the 7th perek, 8th perek, we're going to talk about this in much greater detail. Right now, I'm just going to give you the one piece of information you need to know, and that's the following. When you redeem ancestral property, meaning ancestral property that you consecrated, so how do you redeem it? Fixed rate. What is a fixed rate? So if we're in year one of the Yovel cycle, which means between now and Yovel, we have 50 years, so I redeem it at a rate, at a fixed rate of 50 shkalim for every base core. Okay? And that is going to be the rate in terms of how I redeem it, regardless of whether it's a really good piece of land or it's a really poor piece of land. It does not matter. I always am going to redeem it at that fixed rate. Now, what if there are less than 50 years? So you prorate. So in other words, right, we'll learn the formula later on. We already talked about it earlier in the Masechta as well. I just simply take the number 50 shkalim and I divide into 49 units and I prorate it based on how many years are remaining till the Yovel year. But the basic point, however, is that redeeming your ancestral property, you redeem it based on a fixed rate.
So you have to be careful if you're buying it, not to pay too much because I can just redeem it for a fixed rate.
Right. Okay, now... What if it's purchased property and not ancestral property? Stay mikna. So by stay mikna, so there I redeem it not at a fixed rate, but at its actual value. Okay?
Isn't that value based on Yovel?
Again, same thing. In other words, we're going to base it on how many years are remaining till Yovel, but still, though, in terms of what that number is going to be, it's not going to be a fixed number. It's going to be based on its current market value. How much would that land lease for 4 or 5 years, 10 years, however many years are remaining until Yovel? Okay, so the Mishnah, it's going to be the same point again and again. Meaning anytime it's a fixed value, it could either be a kula or it could be a chumra. Meaning the land could be an unbelievably good qualitative land, and so therefore the fixed value is a kula. Or it could be a really, really poor land, and the fixed value will end up being a chumra. Okay, it's the same point reiterated. We talked about it in terms of erech. We're now going to talk about it in terms of steachuza. The Mishnah, let's read the Mishnah. B'steachuza l'akol ha'achmer ketzad echan ha'makdash b'chola samachuz. If you're sanctifying chola samachuz, Rashi says chola samachuz is talking about the surrounding lands of a city. Right? Cholas, Rashi says, comes from the word seviva, the surrounding area. Okay? Mechol HaKerem, he quotes the Mishnah in Kolayim. So the Echad HaMakdash Bechol HaMachuz VeEchad HaMakdash BeBardeus Sabasti. And by the way, the surrounding area of any city is assumed to be just basically junky area, junky land. And or if you're Makdash Pardesio Sabasti, right? The orchards of Sabasti. Okay, I don't know geographically where it is. It doesn't matter. The point is that is a really good quality land. No saying Zera Chomer Sa'orim Bechamishim Shekel Kesef. When you redeem that land, meaning after consecration, you want to now redeem that land, you pay a fixed rate for redemption. Uviz de mikna no stein eshavav. As opposed to stein mikna, if it's not an ancestral field, but it's a purchase field, then you consecrate it, so then you pay shavav, you pay its actual value. Now, Rebbe Elazar Omer, echatz de mikna vechatz de achuza, ma bein stein achuza le stein mikna. Sorry, I read too quickly. Rebbe Elazar says, same. Meaning they both operate with a fixed value, stay mikna and stay achuza. What's the difference between them? According to Rabbi Elazar, ma bein stay achuza or stay mikna, shebe stay achuza, who knows in chomish of a stay mikna, in who knows in chomish, is there a surcharge? Meaning that by stay achuza, there's going to be a surcharge of a fifth, which of course we know is 25%, right? And by the stay mikna, there's not going to be a surcharge of 25%, okay? We'll talk about this later on. Amar Rav Huna. Okay, we are going to finish today with a halacha of Rav Huna. Hikdish de male ilanos. Okay, if a person were to consecrate a land, but the land has trees on it. So in other words, it's not just a simple piece of property. It's a property with actual produce on top of it. Trees with produce. Kishuhu podan poda ilanus bishavyan vechoze upoda karka. Beis zera chomer sa'orim v'chamishim shekel kesef. So Rav Huna says like this. We're going to assume, meaning what happened when he sanctified the field? Did he view the field as just simply one entity? Land plus trees? Or did the person basically say, look, let's segregate. The land is the land, but the trees is a separate transaction. Now, a person has every right, when he has land with a tree on it, to sell the two of them separate. He could segregate the two, and he can turn it into two separate transactions. Okay? You could do that. This person, when he sanctified the field, was not specific. He didn't say, I'm sanctifying the trees and the land as two separate transactions, or I sanctified them as one whole unit. He didn't specify. Rav Huna says, we're going to assume he sanctified it as two separate transactions, trees and land.
How come you don't go away the principle that the Beit HaMikdash always has the upper hand?
Okay, well, that's essentially what Rav Huna is saying.
But he's not saying
he is saying, I'll explain, he's saying that. Because now as two separate transactions, now when you redeem, so the trees now are not land. Meaning because the trees were separate, sanctified on their own. I understand the trees are connected to the ground, but they weren't sanctified together with the land. So therefore, when he redeems the trees, we're going to treat the trees as not property, but as simply items. And therefore, when he redeems the trees, he's going to have to redeem them at their value. Then after that, he's going to have to redeem his land, assuming it's ancestral property, at its fixed rate of 50 shekels for every kor.
But does he donate it? But he could just not donate the trees to the Beit HaMikdash. He could just donate the land and give the trees somewhere.
That could also have been, that could have been as well, Alma Kasavra, but that's exactly what Rav Huna is saying. Alma Kasavra Rav Huna, Adam Makdish Be'ayin Yafeh Makdish. So Rav Huna says that when a person sanctifies, we will always assume he's being generous. Okay? And so therefore, whatever is going to be the best result for the Beis HaMikdash is always going to be our default assumption in terms of what a person does. Meaning in any transaction between one person and another, and there's ambiguity in that transaction, we don't normally assume, oh, I was being generous in the transaction. No. In other words, because in any normal transaction, both parties have a self-interest. And so therefore, if there's ambiguity, we don't just simply assume, oh, don't worry, seller was being generous. We don't assume that. Everybody has a self-interest involved. But when you're being makdish, you're giving something, it's also a transaction, but you're giving something over to the Beis HaMikdash, we will assume that because a person is in a giving to the Beis HaMikdash mentality, therefore, any ambiguity will go into the favor of Beis HaMikdash. And so whatever to them is going to be a bonus is how we're going to interpret the transaction. Here, land with trees is always going to be assumed to be the best case scenario for the Beis HaMikdash, which would be two separate transactions. So that when you redeem, trees by themselves, land by themselves. Okay. Two quick questions against Rav Huna. Ezra Rav Nachman Rav Huna Echad Makdish Becholos Hamachuz Echad Makdish Bepardir Sebasti Nosim Beit Zera Chomer Sorim Mechamishim Shekel Kesef. So he says, can we look back at our Mishnah for just a moment? Our Mishnah, what was the Makdish in our Mishnah? An orchard, right? The Pardes Sebasti, the Sebastian orchard. An orchard has trees on it, right? And what did the Mishnah say? That when you redeem it, fixed rate for redemption. What about the trees? So Amalei Ru'uya LePardesias Kamina. So Rav Huna says, when you read the Mishnah, don't read it so literally. There weren't actual trees on the orchard. It means the land was so good, you could just go plant trees on it. Okay. Eitzvei Beizera Einli Ela Beizera Sadei Gafanim V'Stei Kanim V'Stei Eilanas Minayin Tamalomar Sadei Mikol Makom. So the Gemara quotes a Braisa. It darshens not just a piece of land, but even a piece of land with vines, with reeds, with trees. So Amalei Hachinami Poda V'Chozer Poda. So he says, that Bryce also. That just simply means that you're going to redeem the trees for its value, and then when it comes to the land, you're going to redeem the land at the fixed rate. Okay. And you'll see more of this as we go along in the Gemara. But again, the basic idea now is that according to Rav Huna, if there are trees on the property, the trees are viewed as a separate transaction, not in conjunction with the property. Why? Ayin Yafa. Because when a person gives to the Beis HaMikdash, we assume best case scenario for the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. We finished the first paragraph this morning, talked about our ranges of numbers, we talked about the boys' choir, started the second perek, and started the third perek this morning, kulas versus chumras, whenever there's a fixed rate, so it could either represent a kula or a chumra, depending on what the actual value is of the item. Okay, we'll finish off, tomorrow we'll finish off the stay mikna, stay achuza discussion, and tomorrow, God willing, we'll talk about Kriyas Yamsuf as well. Hopefully we'll get that far. Rabbi Chananya ben Akash, Amar Rasek, Zvarko, Zakri, Sof, Ficha, Chir, Ventura, Mitzvah, Shenem, Arnecha, Feitza, Matziko, Yagdil, Torah, Vyadir.